This is Weekly Dose of Wellness, brought to you by Memorial Care Health System. Here's Deborah Howell.
Hello and welcome to our show. You're listening to Weekly Dose of Wellness, brought to you by Memorial Care Health System. I'm Deborah Howell, and today our guest is Dr. Jack Jacoub, oncologist and medical director of thoracic oncology at the Memorial Care Cancer Institute at Orange Coast Memorial Medical Center. Today we'll be discussing the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer, how family history plays a role, and the importance of regular screenings. Welcome, Dr. Jacoub.
Thank you.
Right off the bat, what is ovarian cancer?
It's a cancer of a part of the female reproductive system, in this case, the ovaries. Mm-hmm. As you know, the ovaries are hormonally functioning organs that kind of produce estrogen and maintain a woman through her premenopausal life. And the importance of estrogen probably doesn't have to be stated to your listeners.
Right.
But also, ovarian cancer encompasses other types or other locations of cancer within the abdominal cavity, including the lining of the abdominal cavity called the peritoneum.
Ah.
We include ovarian cancer and peritoneal cancer all in sort of one form of the disease. That's because during embryonic development, the lining of the cavity of the abdominal wall is very similar to that of the ovary itself. So both ovarian cancer and peritoneal cancer are the topics that we'll be talking about today.
That's a very good nutshell diagnosis, not diagnosis, description. Now,
yeah.
What are some of the common signs and symptoms you might experience if you've had ovarian cancer?
Well, unfortunately, they can be nonspecific, which partly underlies why all too often the presentation of ovarian cancer or in another uncommon scenario, primary peritoneal cancer,
mm-hmm.
Is in advanced settings. Because it's non-specific abdominal discomfort, it's bloating, it's urinary frequency. Rarely is there vaginal discharge, but that certainly would be a concern in a postmenopausal woman, especially if it's bloody. At times it's early satiety, meaning when you eat, you get full a lot quicker.
Okay.
Sometimes abdominal girth is increased, just putting on your skirt or your pants might be a little bit tighter than usual.
Mm.
It can be very non-specific, and that also also segues a little bit later down in the show in discussing screening and trying to catch this at an earlier point.
Right.
Again, to be fairly nonspecific.
Okay, those are a lot of, I haven't heard some of those. I hadn't heard about frequent urination before and girth.
Well, it predominantly is related to pressure within the pelvic organ systems, including the bladder, from masses, from fluid. And the fluid buildup is called ascites, which is abnormal fluid accumulation within the abdominal cavity, which can be benign, but in the context of what we're talking about, it's related to ovarian cancer. And actually, the abdominal fluid can be among the more common presentations where the abdominal girth is increased. There's swelling in the belly, and there's pressure on the bladder and other places. But that's among the more common presentations, frankly.
Interesting. Can ovarian cancer be detected through a Pap test?
No. It's important to know that a Pap smear is looking specifically for cervical cancer.
Okay.
Which is an entirely different cancer than ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, fallopian tube cancer, et cetera. But nonetheless, routine gynecologic evaluation, pelvic examination, which includes a bimanual examination that the physician is actually feeling for both adnexes or both ovaries,
mm-hmm.
In each lower quadrant, and doing a Pap smear at the time, and obviously assessing the familial history, which we'll touch on a little bit later, and any symptoms that might be concerning. But a Pap smear specifically is for cervical cancer. It is not for ovarian cancer.
Okay, that would naturally want me to have to ask, how is ovarian cancer then diagnosed and staged?
Well, that's a very good question. So ovarian cancer, as I mentioned to you, is somewhat nonspecific, and late presentations are among the, it's actually the common presentation in most women. It is detected by identifying someone who is at high risk. And also someone who's having routine yearly gynecologic evaluations. And from that standpoint, it's abdominal imaging. If there's a question, including a pelvic ultrasound,
mm-hmm.
occasionally there'll be laboratory testing as well included, although it's controversial. The CA125 is a well-established marker for ovarian cancer.
Okay.
It should always be pursued if it's elevated in someone who's postmenopausal.
And that would be like a blood test?
It's a blood test,
okay.
Right. But again, the threshold has to be there. The gynecologist has to be has to have that on their radar to be able to identify it at an earlier stage. But often the earlier stage diseases are caught because of a family history or some identifying factor that increases a woman's risk. I didn't mention that, you know, advancing age is a risk factor. As we get older, there's a higher risk of having ovarian cancer, as is other types of cancers, frankly. People who have not had children, people who still have, obviously, their intact uterus and ovaries, people who have perhaps had hormone therapies and things like that in the postmenopausal setting, these are all controversial risk factors. But it's having, at times, imaging for looking at the uterus or looking for some pelvic symptom that leads to the discovery of an ovarian mass, and that ultimately leads to the evaluation, which includes abdominal imaging, the CA-125, as I mentioned to you, and then a surgical evaluation, not by a gynecologist if there's suspicion of cancer, if a high suspicion of cancer, but by a surgeon who happens to be a gynecologist but is focused on gynecologic cancers, and that's a gynecologic oncologist who does a surgery. So that's the typical evaluation and the discovery of it. I didn't mention, by the way, how common this cancer is, and it's kind of important probably for the listeners to know that this is not an uncommon cancer overall. It's roughly around 3% of cancers in women, but it is the most common gynecologic cancer in women, and it is the most lethal. It's estimated about 20,000 or so cases will be diagnosed this year, in 22,000 cases in the U.S. this year. And again, a very high percentage of those individuals ultimately will succumb to their disease. So maybe we'll touch on a little bit later about earlier detection, but identifying your risk profile is the most important thing.
Absolutely. And what are some risk factors or lifestyle influences that may contribute?
I mentioned the familial history. Okay, this is sort of a major area to focus in on because of how nonspecific the symptoms and presentations are. The risk factors are fairly nonspecific: getting older, hormonal intake, what kind of body habitus someone has, et cetera. Those are somewhat, clear cut, but they're so nonspecific. But the family history is actually quite powerful. There are two cancer syndromes that exist. There are many cancer syndromes, actually. There are two there that we are well aware of and have a fairly good understanding of their implications to ovarian cancer as well as other cancers. One of them is called the Lynch syndrome, which is associated with other cancer sites, including colon cancer, uterine cancer, and ovarian cancer. And the other more common cancer syndrome is related to something called BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations that are genetic, and those are related to DNA repair functions. That is the one that maybe the listeners are aware of, are familiar with, because in the recent media exposure of Angelina Jolie and other individuals have come forth about their hereditary breast cancer or their hereditary ovarian cancer, oftentimes it is related to, as I mentioned, the BRCA mutations. Now, that is a separate type of hereditary cancer syndrome. In another way, it's called the breast ovarian cancer syndrome. Mm-hmm. And the risk of having breast and ovarian cancer is exceptionally high in both of those genetic disorders. So in total, about 10% of people with ovarian cancer have one of these disorders, but it is very common for someone with ovarian cancer to have a familial history. And a familial history does, even if they didn't have those genetic disorders, frankly, by itself increases the risk of having ovarian cancer in a woman. It increases it something in the range of threefold, if not more.
Wow.
It's just 5% increase. So just the familial history alone should be able to identify sufficient risk that would warrant a fairly, strict surveillance schedule or more closer follow-up from the gynecologist in regards to the development of ovarian cancer or those other cancers I mentioned, of course, breast, colon, uterine, et cetera.
Right.
In women, in men, it's prostate cancer is included in some of those hereditary cancer syndromes, pancreatic cancer as well. So, and oftentimes, if there is a familial history of an ovarian cancer and that person has been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, or if there isn't a familial history and that person has been diagnosed with ovarian cancer as well as the primary peritoneal cancer I mentioned in the beginning, those individuals should also see a geneticist because they should have a fairly comprehensive genetic pedigree taken, history taken, and then further testing as needed because it impacts them, but it also impacts the rest of their family.
Okay, so what else should a woman do if she's experiencing any of the symptoms that you outlined?
Well, she should immediately bring up to her primary care physician, if the primary care physician is functioning as her woman's health doctor, meaning that they're doing the pelvic examinations and pap smears, et cetera. And then, or to her gynecologist, if she has a gynecologist who's responsible for those aspects of her care.
Okay.
But either way, she needs to bring this up to the physician right away. And then from there, they can elect to refer to a gynecologist, or if they're in the hands of a gynecologist, do the abdominal imaging, do SA-125. There's some other blood tests. Do some other blood tests as well, in addition to complete blood count, chemistry panels, kidney, liver function, things like that.
Okay.
And then if the risk is, or the appearance of the imaging, or if there's any concern about what's happening, that person should probably see a gynecologic oncologist because they may require surgery.
Yeah, and as you
and
said...
And by the way, that is the cornerstone of therapy for this cancer in the earlier stages, but the majority of women get both a combination of chemotherapy and surgery.
Okay, so, and as you said, it is the most lethal form, so you got to stay proactive about your ovarian health.
Absolutely. You know, in regards to the therapy of ovarian cancer, that actually has also recently accelerated over the past few years. This is a disease that's considered to be drug sensitive. So we have many drugs, chemotherapy drugs, targeted drugs, biologic drugs that are active and have been proven to work in this setting and have been approved by the FDA, for example. But in the field, in the research field as well, there's many trials hosted by several cooperative groups throughout the country that women who unfortunately are confronted with advanced disease or recurrent ovarian cancer hopefully have access to. But it's a very ripe field for not only robust research, but there's a lot of very good therapies that are available now and that are in the pipeline that will be available very soon for these women. But again, the bigger message is early detection.
Early detection. Be
because
proactive.
That's when you can cure this.
Okay. Do you have a source that you would like to refer our listeners to if they want to learn more?
I would probably, there's an ovarian cancer foundation that they can perhaps search and they can find. There's a whole host of information in regards to that. The American Society of Clinical Oncology, ASCO, also has a very good educational portion regarding not only ovarian cancer, but most cancers and specifically gynecologic malignancies. I would tell the viewers ASCO would be a very good source, American Society of Clinical Oncology. Both of those would be wonderful sources for information.
Great. Thank you so, so much, Dr. Jakub. We could do a couple of hours together, but maybe you'll come back and join us again very soon, I hope.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
It's been so great to have Dr. Jakub on the program today to talk to us about ovarian cancer. Ladies, get your screenings, okay? To listen to the podcast or for more information, please visit memorialcare.org. That's memorialcare.org. I'm Deborah Howell. Join us again next time as we explore another weekly dose of wellness brought to you by Memorial Care Health System. Have yourself a fantastic day.